Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Canuck Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We are in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canuck Central, getting ready for the playoffs. Still probably a week or so away, maybe a few days less. We'll see what it ends up being, but the Nashville Predators are very much the heavy favorite to be the first round opponent after the LA Kings dropped one to the Minnesota Wild last night. Let's get to our next guest. It is Irfan Ghaffar, Canucks insider, joining us here on Canuck Central. What's happening, Irf?
What's going on, fellas? How we doing? Get this regular season done with.
Right? Whoa. These are pretty much just preseason games, these next two, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Except for, yeah. I mean,
like they still have to clinch the division, I guess, but they're pretty much preseason games.
Yeah. Going through the motions a little bit. Don't get hurt. Try and work on things in your power play, your PK. But again, I emphasize the don't get hurt part. So these next two games are important in that aspect of it. But I mean, if you're the Canucks, you definitely want to work on some things that you haven't liked about your game while still trying to maintain that level of play where you have had some success lately, and try and, you know, put that trajectory in the right direction as you head in towards the playoffs.
I know it's fun for us to debate, like, oh, who would be the best first round opponent? You know, you'd love to avoid Vegas if you can, and Nashville probably lines up better considering their record against the LA Kings so far this year. But in actuality, I feel the team has been pretty constant with their message all season long, no matter who their opponent is. It's, we've got to focus on ourselves, we've got to focus on our game, and as long as we do that, we think we'll have success. And I think it's, for at least for them, it's the same mindset with whomever their playoff opponent may be.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing, right? You can't go into it thinking, oh, if we drop a point, we're going to play Nashville, or if we get an extra point, you know, we might play Vegas or whatever the situation might be. I think that from their perspective, it's, you can only focus on yourself. Otherwise, you're going to run into trouble, you know, worrying about who you're going to play more than focusing on what you're doing yourself and what you're trying to accomplish. And I agree with what you said. I mean, their message has, yes, it's definitely been that of, you know, if we take care of our business, we play the way that we know we can play, there's not very many teams that can beat us. Mm-hmm. Now, for our job, and what we do, it's fun. It's who do they match up the best against, right? Do we think it's Nashville? I don't know. I trust Nashville's goalie more than I trust the other two teams. I think their games against Vegas, those games were exciting to watch. You know, I'm not really sold on what Aiden Hill's bringing right now. And for the LA Kings, I mean, it's going to be boring. The Canucks haven't played that well against them. But of the three goalies, I probably trust Cam Talbot the least, if you're asking me about their potential opponents.
Yeah, and obviously you're right. Like, when it comes to these the opponents, I'm not sure there's a ton separating, say, even LA and Nashville, for instance. I mean, Vegas is the one that a lot of people, you know, would be concerned about playing. I think the question I have about a team like Vegas is, would the players on the Canucks want to play a team like Vegas? One thing I've kind of wondered about is that they may want the challenge of trying to take down a big team in the first round.
Well, I think if you want to, I mean, it's the age-old thing, right? If you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. And until the Vegas Golden Knights, until someone takes the Stanley Cup away from them, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions for a reason. Now, look, they can turn it on like anyone. They're going to get Mark Stone back for probably game one of the playoffs. That's going to add a different element to them. But, I mean, if I'm the Canucks, like, I really don't worry. I don't think you can, right? I don't think you can put any energy or any stock into looking at who you play. I think that, you know, they've proven that they can beat those teams on some nights this season. And when they do play at their best, there aren't a lot of teams that can really compete with them in that level. So it's about trying to get to that level if you are them, you know, as we await the next few days here.
So Sat and I were discussing in the opening segment, what else is there to see here? And, you know, getting Demko in and letting him show that he can be ready and get a feel for the puck and have some rhythm, some kind of rhythm going into the playoffs. Sure, that would be nice. But is the biggest question mark still Elias Pettersson and whether or not he'll find his top form for the start of the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, the Demko one's interesting too because, you know, you want to get him into games. You want to get him to feel the rhythm, like you just said, and, you know, make some stops and feel what's like in a game situation, guys crashing his crease and not being too friendly. And I'm sure that he wants to do that as well and you know, have these two games for that. Elias Pettersson, look, I think that we've talked a lot about him since the All-Star break and obviously since he signed his massive contract about, you know, the consistency, the lack of production and things like that. And the only person that's going to get Elias Pettersson out of this quote-unquote funk is Elias Pettersson. Now, whatever he needs to do to get himself ready, I don't really care about these two games that much. As long as he's ready to go, round one, game one, that's all that Canucks fans should be worried about. If by game three, we haven't seen Elias Pettersson really do anything or still kind of be the same type of player that he has been the last little while, then I think that we can really start to look and say, okay, is he battling through something? Or there's got to be a lot more going on here.
And yeah, you're right. I mean, we won't really know until the playoffs. It's like much of everything with this team in general, too. Like, we won't really know everything about them until the playoffs do come around. One player that has returned from injury is Elias Lindholm, and he had a big game the other night against the Edmonton Oilers. How excited do you think he is to really prove himself in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot has to do with, you know, not only is he proving things to himself that he can go and, you know, be a big, you know, solution to what the Canucks are trying to do, but also he's on a contract season, right? Like, you've got to go out and you've got to, you know, prove to other teams and 31 other teams in the National Hockey League what he's worth. So this is make or break time for a guy like Elias Lindholm, right? You know, there's a difference of millions of dollars that could be on the table here if he goes out and has an outrageous postseason. I mean, look at what Evander Kane did for the Edmonton Oilers that one season, right? He went out, he put up a bunch of goals in the postseason, earned himself a lot of money. So Elias Lindholm can definitely do that for the Vancouver Canucks, but what they need from him is to be the guy that, you know, he's shown in the last couple of games. Really strong defensively, really good on the penalty kill, can take faceoffs whenever you want and be able to, you know, take care of business on your own side of the puck. I think that's the biggest thing. The offense eventually will come. I'm not entirely too worried about that. I think that there is a point where he's able to break out, but if you're Vancouver, like, I think what you're bringing him for is to be that guy that you can depend on both sides of the puck.
I mean, we hear from people all the time. I'm sure you do as well. Like, they traded that huge package for a third-line center. Like, put him with Pettersson and let them figure it out. And I get that sentiment. At the same time, I've really come around to where Rick Tocchet is on this, because the way it looked against Edmonton, having Lindholm with Joshua and Garland matching up against Dreisaitl and how well it worked, how well it can open up Pettersson and Miller to maybe take softer matchups, I think ultimately it makes a lot of sense in my mind after seeing it in practice to have Lindholm there in that third line center spot.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, right? Because I think when the Canucks acquired him, we didn't really know where he was going to play. I don't think he knew where he was going to play, to be completely honest. Was he going to be on the wing? Was he going to be in the middle? Was Pettersson going to be on the wing? Was he going to be on JT Miller's wing, the top six guy? Or is he going to be their 3C? Now, as you head into the playoffs, I think that I agree with you, Dan. I think that this is probably the best fit for him, right? Because he is good in his own end. And he's good at those matchups. He likes playing that type of game, shutting down the team's best players, right? He's good in his own end. So is he going to be a guy that's going to get you 10 to 15 points or 10 goals in the postseason? Probably not. That's why you have, you know, guys like Elias Pettersson and JT Miller to do that. But if he's able to shut down a team's top line to do what you alluded to and freeing up guys like Elias Pettersson, I think Canucks will take that every single day.
Yeah, and I mean, especially if he can win his matchups, it just opens everybody up in such a positive way, right? Now, the other aspect of the overall Canucks team game has been how they play defensively and how good they've been as a unit. And one guy, obviously, that is in line to make a lot of money alongside Quinn Hughes is Filip Hronek. I mean, just like some guys on the back end, there's been some erratic games. Even Quinn himself has had some erratic games. Even Cole, obviously, Soucy, who's been so solid, has had a few games. And Zadorov, even, and we all know Myers can have a little bit of variance in his game. What do you think of the way the blue line's played, especially the way Filip Hronek's been playing lately?
Well, I think I agree. It's kind of been sporadic, right? And I think that this team on the blue line is, Quinn Hughes is going to be that driving force, right? He's going to have to carry Filip Hronek on most nights. I mean, I'm not entirely sure. We've had this debate for so long about what Filip Hronek's going to be worth. Like, well, this is the time that you need to prove it, much like Elias Lindholm. Is, you know, this is where you show how much money you should be making. You know, you look at guys like Tyler Myers. I haven't had a problem with Tyler Myers. I think for what the role that he's been given this season by Rick Tocchet and his staff, I think it's fit him perfectly. Doesn't need to do too much. Okay, yes, I'm annoyed at the penalties that he takes, the tripping, the high sticking, things like that. Needs to cut that out in the playoffs because teams will kill you. But for what the role he's been given, I really don't have a problem with that. Soucy's going to be a physical guy. He's starting to come into his own a little bit. I'm curious to see, you know, status of his health, and he has been pretty healthy since he's come back, so that's been a good thing. Ian Cole's the interesting one, right? It's how many games is he going to get into? Are they going to do some type of load management with him? Or is it going to be Noel Jusa that ends up, you know, kind of taking over a little bit? And then with Zadorov, I think is what you see with what you get, or what you see is exactly what you get with that guy. Just a big defenseman, will chip in offensively occasionally and, you know, hopefully stay out of the penalty box.
You love to see it. Alex Ovechkin just chested a puck into the net. Looked like he's playing for the national team in a World Cup or something like that. I don't know, but
goal's a goal.
Yeah, goal's a goal. Washington is up 1-0 on the Flyers as we speak currently on Sportsnet. We'll keep an eye on that one for you throughout the night as it has plenty of playoff implications. There's a lot. We mentioned Lindholm. We've talked a ton about Joshua, how much, you know, he's increased his value going into unrestricted free agency this summer. I think under the radar, like a player that has a lot to prove and gain with a successful playoff run here is Brock Besser, considering he's coming off a 40-goal season now and a year away from unrestricted free agency. I think the only thing he has left to prove really is, like, can this guy be a performer in the playoffs as well as what he just showed us in the regular season?
Yeah, but then that same goes for guys like Elias Pettersson, right? Thatcher Demko, Quinn Hughes,
yeah.
All of these guys. And, I mean, I know that they're a lot of years away from their contracts, but this core group, other than, you know, a cup of tea in the bubble or whatever it was, hasn't shown anything in the playoffs. I mean, these are the real NHL playoffs. You know, they're what week away, less than a week away. These guys got to be ready for it. And I agree with you, but Brock Besser is going to have the 40-goal score under his belt forever, right? That's never going to go away. So you're looking at your next contract negotiation. His agent's going to go to Patrick Alvin and say, my guy's a 40-goal score, and this is how many he had on the power play, and you need him. You need to get him involved because this is how your team had success. So, yeah, you know, you hope that he finds that velocity in his shot. He gets into those dirty areas. And he's a guy that, you know, wants to be a part of everything. And I don't think he's going to take a step back. I just it just wouldn't make any sense for the season that he's having. But the games get tighter. The checking gets a lot harder. It's a lot more physical in the playoffs. So Brock Besser, not only him, but the rest of his team is going to need to be able to step up to that occasion and be able to step up and A, defend yourself, but B, be able to play that game where teams know the book on the Canucks that they don't like being leaned on. So if that happens, you know, you expect the Canucks to push back a little.
Well, that's the thing, because, I mean, you're right. You hear it from people around the league, from some players and some teams, that they feel like they can, if they had to get into a street fight with them, they could take care of business against them. I think that's a motivating factor against, like in the, I think the Canucks in their room also know that that's kind of their MO outside of the city. And I wonder if they're motivated to push back when those things do happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. I think that now, you know, and the biggest thing is you can't look to the referees.
Right.
Right? You can't look to them to make calls. And to be completely honest, with the amount of, you know, whining, for lack of a better word, the Canucks have done with the officiating and been public about it, about not getting calls, you know, I think some of the games might be officiated a little differently in the playoffs, right? Referees don't like being talked about. That's just it. And it's known. It's in the history of the NHL. Everyone knows about it. But when it comes down to teams and matchups and stuff like that, I've talked to guys that play for Vegas, you know, LA, and obviously, you know, people that play for Nashville or people that sort of cover the Nashville Predators a lot. Everyone wants to play Vancouver. They're not a team that really scares anybody, right? Like they did in the beginning of the season, they tailed off, but I think with the way that they've been playing down the stretch, a lot of teams feel like, you know, they'd rather play them than the Edmonton Oilers. No one wants to play the Edmonton Oilers with the way that they've been rolling. They're the best team since like mid-November. So it's going to be interesting, right? And I think the rising to the challenge is something that the Vancouver Canucks are going to have to do.
Yeah, well, some of that might just be like, yeah, Canucks got off to a hot start and then kind of rolled with it the rest of the season. Finished a little bit slower, and maybe they're not the most formidable opponent out there, but the West is really a gauntlet. There isn't, as Philip Deneau put it last night, everybody's a wagon in the West, pretty much. So it's going to be interesting. Final one, Quinn Hughes. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about the Hart Trophy right now, and sure, I'm not expecting Quinn Hughes to be a finalist for the award with the way that Kucherov, McDavid, and MacKinnon and Matthews have all played. But I think there's a real chance Quinn Hughes will be number five on a lot of ballots for the Hart Trophy. And it wouldn't be, like, to me, that's the way it should be. If I had a vote, that's the way I would have it. Maybe there's a little bit of bias given I've watched Quinn Hughes play every game this season, but the guy's been unreal, and I don't think the Canucks are anywhere close to where they are in the standings without the way that Quinn Hughes has played for this team, the way that he's managed games, the way that he's won games for them with his play out of the back end.
Yeah, I agree. But it is the league's best player, like the league's most valuable player. He's the most valuable player to the Vancouver Canucks, without a question.
Yeah.
It's not even close. So I do agree with you, but right, like, sex sells a little bit, and these goal scorers, Kucherov, not Matthews, MacKinnon, McDavid, like the seasons that they've been putting up on historic levels, like the numbers are just obscene.
Yeah.
Right. So voters are going to vote for that based on 1, 2, 3. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Quinn Hughes should be on ballots that are, you know, number at number 4 and 5. The crazy thing is when these ballots do come out, people need to realize that Quinn Hughes might not be 1 or 2 in some people's Norris Trophy ballots, just from the way that the voters have watched games in the past and things like that. So it wouldn't shock me at all. It's crazy to say that out loud and actually hear it, but there will definitely be a ballot. Somewhere out there, some voter is not going to like the Vancouver Canucks or doesn't watch many of their games, is going to have 1 or 2 players ahead of Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, maybe not even have Quinn Hughes on the ballot at all. So we'll see how it goes. Is there a bigger guarantee in life than Scottie Scheffler in a golf tournament right now? Doesn't feel like it.
Nope. Absolutely not. And even when he like plays like crap, he still plays good.
Yeah.
Like his putter wasn't working, and then he was like, double bogey, and then right next hole, birdie par.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he's dialed. It's crazy. It's just insane to watch. Which kind of sucks for the Sunday because there wasn't really much to it. You just knew he was going to win, and he got a 4-shot lead, and it was over.
It was reminiscent of watching like Tiger in 2019, where he just kind of was humming along, and everybody else just started crumbling around. You know?
Yeah. But sometimes that's the way that tournament goes, right?
Yeah.
Like Sunday at the Masters will kill you if you don't have the stones to, you know, get through the round. And Scheffler's won it before, so he knows exactly what it's about. But anyways.
Is he going to have staying power like Tiger did for a long time, or is he going to be just like, you know, we've seen guys have hot runs. Like Rory's had a run, Spieth had a run.
Koepka even.
Koepka's had a run. You know, like guys have gone on runs. It's just, can somebody sustain it? Can he sustain it the same way?
Well, I think that's the craziest thing, right? And you just look at the consistency that he had this weekend. Like, he was just automatic. Like, you knew he wasn't going to make a bad shot. And even if it was, like, a bad putt, he would rebound right away. Like, he didn't let things faze him. Where, like, Rory sometimes will have a bad shot, and that's the end of the round. I mean, that happened to Tiger, too. It happens to a lot of golfers. But with this guy, he's got no emotion. He's, like, heartless. It's crazy.
They've already put up the odds for the PGA Championship next month, and he's plus 450, which is ridiculous. Like you're getting close to like when Tiger was, you had to lay juice on Tiger to win a tournament back in his peak. Scheffler's getting pretty close. It's pretty cool to see that kind of dominance. Irv, you're the best. Always appreciate it. Thanks for this.
All right, guys. Hey, I think we all might be working on Sunday, if you know what I mean.
Is it looking like it's going to be Sunday?
Maybe.
Even if it's Nashville?
I think so. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I think that's to avoid maybe a potential back-to-back in a series.
Yeah.
Where you started a little bit earlier, but yeah, I mean, it would be fun. Give me Sunday afternoon hockey. Well, that would be even better. I don't know about the time, but afternoon would be great.
Yeah.
It probably would be afternoon if they're playing Sunday. Hasn't the NHL already released game times?
Vancouver Sun Run is happening Sunday morning, so that would be tough traffic-wise to have an afternoon game at Rogers Arena if that's going on.
Yeah, I guess they can always, you know, amend the times, but
yeah, yeah. I'm not entirely sure if Gary Bettman or the powers that be at different networks are worried about the Sun Run, to be completely honest.
Oh, there's going to be 40,000 people, me included, running downtown, so I don't know what's going
to
happen.
There you go. There it is. I just wanted you to say it out loud.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. Thanks for that.
All right, gentlemen. Be well.
There it is. Irfan Ghaffar leaving us with a little nugget on when the Canucks first round series may begin.
Yeah. I saw PJ had an article, too, saying he's hearing Sunday as well. You know, we were talking before the show today and saying the word, or yesterday, that, you know, word it was that it's going to be the 21st, that it's not yet fully set in stone. So we'll see. I think. When you look at, and it's something we pointed out before, like a couple weeks back, if you look at Rogers Arena's schedule, if you look at some of the contenders that Canucks play, like Nashville's schedule, and Garth Brooks has a concert there,
yes.
I think, and we joked about this, a Garth Brooks concert, the Canucks, you know, Vancouver has a bunch of concerts, that it could get really tricky in terms of scheduling these games. And if you want to avoid back-to-backs, you may have to start the series a bit earlier.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all unfolds.
Which may give the Predators a little bit of an advantage. Again, their season is over. They're home and cooled out. They're resting while the Canucks still have two games to play on the calendar before their regular season is done. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It is Canucks Central here on Sportsnet 650. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. Predators analyst Chris Mason joins us next on Canucks Central. Back in on Canucks Central, we are for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep Superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We keep things rolling here on Canucks Central. Our next guest, Predators analyst, former NHL goaltender, it is Chris Mason joining us. What's happening, Chris? How are you?
I'm doing great. Just driving home from my daughter's softball game and looking forward to talking to you guys.
That's awesome. I mean, you guys are home and cooled out already. Already played the 82. Now it's just like cruising, waiting for the playoffs to begin.
I know, right? It's weird this year when you have all the 3 days left in the season. The Preds are just going to sit back and wait, and looks like the most likely opponent is the Canucks. So I guess if Dallas, what has to happen? If Dallas loses and Vancouver wins both, then it swaps. But yeah, we'll see. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I mean, and it wouldn't be the first time these two teams have met, of course, in the postseason. The last time was quite a while ago now, 13 years ago in 2011. But it's been quite the season for the Preds. I think going into it on the outside, I don't think a lot of people picked the Predators to make the playoffs. And maybe, you know a lot better than me, but maybe even some surprise internally about how good they were down the stretch and turned things around. How would you encapsulate this year for the Preds and where they find themselves today?
Well, I think, like, when I saw the moves and everything and kind of what they wanted to do, they wanted to change the culture, and they wanted, you know, they didn't really know what it was going to be like, because you got rid of, you know, Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, and you're bringing in some different, you know, kind of leadership type of guys and really trying to change the direction you're going with Barry Trotz. You wanted to get back to kind of the old, you know, hardworking, blue-collar type of mentality with his team, and really, you know, give some young guys some opportunity and build something in that regard. And I don't know, you know, if necessarily the winning was on the table at the start, but you got to give Andrew Burnett a lot of credit. I know Vancouver, those are my top two picks for the Jack Adams, by the way, Tocchet and Andrew Burnett, because of what they've both done with their teams. But his system, I remember the beginning of the season, I'm like, where are the goals going to come from? You lost everyone. Yeah, you got Yossi, you got Forsberg. You know, is O'Reilly going to be able to produce? He's getting older. Nyquist is 34. Is he, you know, it was more of a second line type of player, and a lot of unproven guys up and down the lineup. So that was a question mark. Like, how are they going to score goals? But Andrew Burnett's system has turned out just to absolutely change the complete dynamic of the expectation of this team. And it's just been incredible to watch. It took Yossi you a little bit, because one of the biggest things you want to do with Roman Josi, I mean, you guys have Quinn Hughes, you get to see a special player every single night. And the thing that Andrew Burnett asked of Josi, said, I want you to move the puck. He goes, I know you can carry it up, I know you can skate it through everybody, but I want you to move it, and I want you to join the rush. If it's there, yes, take it if you have no other options, but this is the way that I want to play fast. This is the way that we can, you know, get on offense quicker and transition a lot more efficiently. And it took a while. You're fighting your instincts, but once he got it, and the team got it, everybody, you know, they're used to playing a defensive system, not leaving the zone till the puck leaves. And now they, you know, Andrew Burnett wants them, once they get, you know, they anticipate possession, to blow the zone and, you know, stretch out the defenseman in the neutral zone. And once they got that, man, they could pressure teams, and it was impressive. And everyone got it from the fourth line on all the way up to the first line. It was really something else to watch the growth of this team under Andrew Burnett.
Well, isn't that so much of where offense is created in the league now, Chris? Is just, if you can't create chances off the rush, I mean, it's just so hard to break teams down otherwise.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you have to have it all. I think, you know, that's one of the things that they also did really well, is they pride themselves on the forecheck. They'll get in there, they'll wear them down. The rush, you need to create rush chances. If I go back to, you know, a couple versions of the Predators, that's where they really struggled. There was no odd man rush situations. It was tough to really create any quality. And I think it starts, you need to have that threat on the rush, because if you don't, then the opposition knows, hey, they're just going to chip it in and get the forecheck. And yeah, they might get it in the corner, but we'll be able to handle them. You know, we just won't let them get to the interior. So the more threats that you have, and the more, you know, I guess different options in your game and threats, the harder it is for the opponent. But I just think it was just with the team that they had this year, and nobody, myself included, I did not think they would make the playoffs this year. Just the way that started, and I was just like, they're not going to be able to score. It's just not going to happen. And then once they finally figured it out, it was, they played with anybody since, I think it was November 26th or something like that, or they had the third best record in the league. And you know, that says a lot about, you know, the group playing the system and the buy-in. And you guys know, you guys Vancouver did the same thing. Not a lot of people thought Vancouver would be as good as they do, and you know, here they are. You know, potentially they're going to win, hold on to the Pacific, hopefully, and maybe still have a chance at winning the conference. Just incredible stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And what makes the Preds a tough opponent in the first round for any team is obviously they've been on a run, like you've mentioned here, late in their overall team game, but they have a top forward in Forsberg. They have a top defenseman, Roman Josi, and they have a top goalie in Saros. And we have a player in each one of those positions that's a top level performer and can put it together. How challenging can that be to a first-round opponent?
Yeah, and I think the position the Predators are in, I think everybody knows now, like, hey, this is going to be a tough out. It's not going to be an easy, you know, series against the Predators. I think maybe earlier in the year it would have been like, hey, we got to get that top spot because we want the wild card. I mean, the divisional matchups are just insane nowadays. But when you have those elements, I mean, anything can happen, and I think we all know, you know, just look at last year. Florida barely got in. They didn't even get on. They had to wait till the last day till someone else had to lose. On the last day of the season, they go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And they had those elements too, right? They had, you know, the top forwards. They had the goalie that actually didn't have a great year but played well and has had some good history, played well in the playoffs, and they've got the defenseman. You know, they've kind of got those intangibles, and their depth guys filled in, and everybody kind of, you know, played above, and, you know, they got hot at the right time. And I think the Predators going in right now, I think they're a really confident group. Whoever they play, the pressure is going to be on the other team because they're going to be a top seed. And, you know, the pressure in Vancouver, it's tough. It's real. You know, players feel that. But having said that, you know, Vancouver's probably got a lot of confidence. They played the Predators three times this year and beat them all three times early in the season. If that ends up being the matchup, but I think the Predators put themselves in a good position. And now I really think, you know, when I haven't thought this in years past, that, you know, it doesn't really matter who they match up. I think they can compete with everybody. I mean, that obviously doesn't guarantee winning a series, but I think they'll give whoever they play a fit. And if not, have a chance to win the series and actually do something pretty special in the playoffs. You never know.
there's always so much talk about how good Josi is, and I know for a time during that long run that the Predators were on after the failed go to U2 concert as a team situation happened, there was even some talk about Josi getting some love for the Hart Trophy, and not to say that he doesn't deserve it. I'm surprised there isn't more chatter about how incredible a season Philip Forsberg has had. I mean, 48 goals, finishes just shy of getting to 50 here, career high for him. I mean, he continues to be one of the most underrated lethal snipers in the league, it feels like.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with him is I feel this was his best season ever, just obviously the goals, the offense, but just more of the complete game. I think he rounded out his game. I feel he's always been a star. He's always been, which I think should have been a perennial 40-goal scorer. He's just that talented. But he was a little more inconsistent, a little more streaky. He'd go on the hot streaks, and then he'd cool off for a long period of time. And this year, he just seemed like he was, playing on a different level. He really worked on his defense. And I think, you know, for players, especially offensive players, and you guys probably see this with some of your guys in Vancouver with Tocchet, is once you try to sell defense, working as hard as you can to get the puck back, because I feel Vancouver and Nashville play very similar in terms of the puck possession numbers. If you tell an offense player that wants to play offense, hey, if you work hard and you get the puck back quick, you're going to get to play offense, you're going to have a chance to score more. You know, at first you're like, nah, you know, you got to get that buy-in. But once they commit themselves and they start to do it and they say, holy crap, you know, I got the puck all the time. I've got all these opportunities. He smashed his shot attempt, his career high by over 100, his goals, everything, his possession numbers. You know, you go for years past, his goal percentage scoring from the interior, you know, right around that, the house around the net, if you will, was at about 40%. This year was 70%. Mm-hmm. So his game has evolved. I think he's kind of understood the next level. He kind of leveled up in his understanding of, hey, you know, I want to be a superstar in this league. And I thought he was just awesome. And he's got a physical element to his game. If it gets chippy or physical, he doesn't shy away. He uses that, you know, to motivate himself and to keep him invested in the game. So I thought he was just, it was his best year by far for me.
Well, you know, there are, like we mentioned, some high-end players, and even the way Gustav Nyquist has played this season, up to 75 points on the campaign. But in terms of down the lineup, yeah, maybe not the most prolific bunch of players, but when it comes to the guys on the third and the fourth line, there are a ton of guys with some size, physicality, some speed, they can score a little bit. Like, every time I watch Kiefer Sherwood play, for instance, he looks like a pain in the ass to play against.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the identity of the team. They got this. They're on that big long point streak. I'm sure you guys, everybody covered that after the U2 thing, as you guys mentioned. And Andrew Burnett got everybody on the team hats that said relentless on them. And this, it was more of a reminder that when they're having success, that's how every single guy on the team has to play, because they're not necessarily the most talented team in the league. They don't have, you know, the top superstar lines like other teams. And it's a team that's built on their depth. And everybody, you know, playing to that level. And if certain guys, you know, one line takes a night off or a couple lines, that they're not going to win hockey games. So they really have embodied that. And that Kiefer Sherwood line, who plays Michael McCarron and Cole Smith, not big name guys, but they all just, they've started, I'd say 90% of the games, that's a line that Andrew Burnett will start, just to set the tone, you know, because they play that way. They have started contributing offensively. And they've just done a really good job of finding the balance. And I think at the beginning of the year, it was that top line, O'Reilly, Nyquist, and Forsberg. They were the only ones scoring. And it was really tough. And then, you know, as Andrew Burnett started to get the buy-in and the guys started to figure out the system, other lines started chipping in and, you know, sparingly or whenever they could, and just made an impact for this team. And I think that's why they feel so good, because – you know, obviously, whoever plays the Predators are like, hey, guys, you got to shut down the O'Reilly line. That's, we take care of them and we like our chances. But that's what everybody tried to do. And then the other guy stepped up and started scoring. Tommy Novak's an important player. He signed an extension at the deadline, you know, for 3 more years. And he's a guy that is a highly skilled player, very cerebral, heads up, not flashy, but very intelligent with the puck. He plays with Mark Jankowski. He's got over 300 games. He's having a great year. And Luke Evangelista is another guy that's a young rookie that's kind of figured out his game. And I think the thing with the Predators right now is that early in the season, there was a lot of players and a lot of lines that Burnett couldn't trust necessarily in defensive situations. He'd kind of have to hide them and make sure they got all the ozone starts and all this kind of thing. And now they've kind of all figured it out. So, you know, it certainly helps on the road for matchups. He trusts everybody out there to get the job done. And it's been fun. It's fun when you have a team that competes, to cover a team that competes every single night. And it's not just one or two guys doing it. It's everybody, you know, a different guy every night.
You think there's a team that Nashville matches up better against, like whether it would be Dallas or Vancouver? Is there a style that Nashville just matches up better against when they're going up against opponents?
I don't know. We asked Andrew Burnett this the other day. You know, we're like, who do you think you match up? We asked the exact same question almost. Exactly. And he's like, you know what? He goes, I learned when I played. He goes, I used to think, you know, we got the matchup, the one that we wanted. We beat him in the season series, and all of a sudden, you know, you get bounced in the first round in five games or vice versa. He's like, we'll play who we play. He's like, I feel good about our game. I think that the way that we play will be difficult for anybody else, and probably vice versa. If we play Dallas, they're going to be difficult for us, and Vancouver obviously has some different elements to their game that will be challenging for us as well. So I don't really, didn't really want to get into it, and that's probably, you know, the typical coach's answer.
Yeah.
But I do think that with the Predators, I don't know who they necessarily, because, you know, if I look back at the games against Vancouver, when they played, this is a different team now than that played the Canucks at the beginning of the season. They just hadn't figured out their identity, you know, in that first half. And, you know, Vancouver, I think, is... I mean, Quinn Hughes he'll win the Norris this year, and I think Josi should be a nominee. But I think Quinn Hughes, if you look at his possession numbers, and, you know, he's like, you know, there's only a handful of those guys, Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes, and Roman Josi, that have that skill set. And so he possesses a different threat than, let's say, if you're playing somebody on, you know, if you're playing Dallas or whoever. But I can't pick one because it's just, you never know.
Yeah, I would imagine Coach didn't want to give any whiteboard material out for...
No, exactly. They're too smart now. Yeah.
We can't even goat them into those kinds of answers anymore. Chris, nope. we really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this.
Okay, thank you, guys. Maybe we'll be talking more here in the near future, so take care, guys.
Absolutely. There is Chris Mason, former NHL netminder and now Nashville Predators analyst. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah.
Yeah, so it's really fascinating looking at this Preds team, and he's right. Like, you got to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
you never know how the playoffs are going to unfold, right? And, you know, yes, matchup wise, the Preds probably look better to a lot, and you're not wrong in saying so. But I wouldn't get too bent out of shape about where the Canucks finish and who they end up playing in the first round.
Yeah, it's.
Like, everyone comes with some set of challenges. And yes, I can see how the Preds, again, like, they would be the most preferable team to play against. But he mentions that line of Cole Smith, Michael McCarron, and Kiefer Sherwood. Yeah, they have 31 goals as a line this year, but they scored a lot later. But they're heavy. They're fast. They forecheck. It's the type of line that could have a couple hot games, you know? So it's like, they're not the type of team that has nothing below their top guys. They need Josi, Forsberg, and Soros to be incredible. But if they play incredible and the rest of the guys chip in and play a hard-to-beat style, even if the Canucks win the possession game and outchance them, like, it's not going to be easy to beat them if they're playing at their absolute best, right?
Well, and O'Reilly can neutralize pretty much anybody, right? I mean, he's shown that through his career.
Yeah.
Does he have the same defensive prowess that he did earlier in his career? Maybe not as much, but...
No.
He's still one of the better two-way centermen in the game.
And their defensive depth, like, obviously, I think McDonough's been pretty solid, and, you know, Yossi's great. Lozon's taken a big step. He's been very physical, throws the body a lot, but you can work the rest of the guys. Carrier's pretty good, but he's not amazing. Like, I think their blue line is a bit of an issue. Now, if they play above their heads or something, maybe different. It comes down to how the forwards play, how much you collapse in front of your net, you know, how hard do you make it to beat you and everything. So I don't think they're going to be an easy opponent necessarily.
It's the one series where Vancouver would be the favorite.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think there are a few series.
You think they would be favored against the Kings?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't the Canucks be favored against the Kings?
Well, they've lost a season series.
So?
It would be less of a favorite against the Kings than they would against Nashville.
Yes, maybe. But, I mean, losing the series again, like even like Mason mentioned, I don't know if the season series is that big of an indicator to what's going to happen in the postseason.
That's fair. And the one team that would be an interesting, like, what would the pre-series beginning market look like would be the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, that's the one. Hard to know. Obviously, if you had a better idea of what Mark Stone's health would be going into that series. But there isn't any layups, as we've talked about. Not like you might see in the Eastern Conference, where we've seen this snail race to the finish line for the 82 games. But it's a really interesting spot. Like, Nashville, they've had that rallying point, right? Where the U2 concert that wasn't to be after they lost 9-2 to Dallas. And they've created this relentless mindset. Does that give them sort of a tough to kill kind of vibe? It might. In theory, you might think of it that way. They've played pretty well down the stretch. They slowed down a little bit after their long streak of winning or at least getting a point in every game. The bottom line is, though, I look at Nashville and, like, for a comparison, the Canucks have six forwards that play regularly that have a higher points or goals per 60 average than every other Predator outside of Philip Forsberg. You know, they have one major threat to score goals, and beyond that, they've got to have a team mindset, whereas the Canucks have multiple players that can really beat you.
True. And I'm not saying, again, like, you can look at the end of the season, but if it's going to be 2-1 hockey games, the Preds have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, if the Canucks are going to struggle to score, like, since the All-Star break, the Canucks are -4 on their goal differential, 87 against, 491 against. Right now, of course, Demko being there probably makes that look a lot better, for instance, right? But it's been very tight. They've been playing very tight hockey games. If you're playing low-scoring hockey games, that would play into the Preds' hands. Like, you'd need to have a few games where you get going offensively, and that would be how you win the series. That if you have a few games, you score four goals. You have two games, you score four goals, and then win two close games, and then the Preds maybe struggle to win a couple of close ones. That's what you're going to need. But if the series is going to be a low-scoring series, the Preds would be in it.
At the end of the day, you can't think of it too much if you're the Vancouver Canucks, right? You've got to go out, look for a win against the Calgary Flames tonight. Give your fans fan appreciation night. Give them something to celebrate here on the final night of the regular season at home and get ready for the postseason. You know, Dallas, their fate is in their hands. Are they probably going to rest a couple of guys? I would imagine so. In their final game of the season, they don't have a ton left to lock up outside of, hey, we need a point to officially clinch the Western Conference. And then, you know, Vegas and LA, it's not really your choice of who you play. It depends on how their games finish.
Yeah, and I mean, and a lot of it, yeah, Dallas, you know, if Dallas wins on Wednesday, then, or picks up even a point on Wednesday, then it doesn't matter what the Canucks do outside of just get one more point than Edmonton, right, and finish first in the division. But let's say the Canucks do start Sunday, like there is the buzz now that the Canucks start the play game one on Sunday.
Yeah.
Don't you kind of want to win tonight then, put the division away? So you can definitely rest a couple guys on Thursday. So you can give whomever needs a day.
Yeah,
I think you can rest up to four guys. The Canucks can't recall anybody. They're capped out, even with sending Shelovs down. When they activate Demko, which they will here or have already activated him,
they're carrying 14 forwards and 8 D right now.
Yeah, so they could rest four players. Preferably, you'd want to do 2 forwards and 2 D.
Yeah,
you could do 3 forwards at 1 D, and then have one forward. You know, have an extra defenseman and everything. You could make it work and carry 11 forwards for the last game. Like, who cares? So you can be creative with how you go about it. But I think you want to take care of business then tonight. If you could be starting on Sundays, so you can give those guys that need that extra day the day off, so not that extra travel to Winnipeg.
It's the extra travel is the interesting part because you have to go to Winnipeg. Would you give a couple of maintenance days to JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, whomever may need it? That's the bit of a question mark that the Canucks have to answer. But it all starts with tonight. We're going to get more into the pregame. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet, his take on the matchup with the Calgary Flames. We'll also dip in on what's happening with the Washington Capitals and Philadelphia Flyers. Currently, the Caps still leading 1-0 on a goal from Alex Ovechkin in the first period. Also was a controversial play in which Philadelphia had what could have been a goal called off because of an early whistle from referee Sutherland. We'll have more to come. It is Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. You're listening to Canuck Central.